This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. If you have kids, or if you've been to a shiny new playground lately, you've probably noticed that the equipment has been getting pretty elaborate. All kinds of metal and plastic gizmos, crazy slides and climbing structures. It looks fun, but some child development experts have been advancing an alternative in recent years. They're called natural playgrounds, play spaces that use natural materials and leave it up to the kids on what to do with them. Boston's nonprofit Children's Investment Fund took notice of this bubbling movement, and last year it put out $250,000 in grant money for local schools and early childhood centers to build a handful of natural playgrounds. Those projects are now coming online. Radio Boston's Adam Ragusa checked out one that caters to a very special population.
A short walk from the grit of Mattapan Square, there's a grassy tract of land dotted with impressive old Italianate, Georgian, and Tudor Revival buildings. This campus was once known as the Boston Sanatorium, and before that, it was the Consumptives Hospital. From tuberculosis in the late 19th century to HIV in the late 20th century, this has been the infirmary of Boston's worst urban plagues. It's where the Children's AIDS Program set up shop in the 80s. Today, that program exists as the Spark Center, a preschool for the children of urban poverty. These are the low birth weight kids, some with HIV, some with physical or cognitive development problems like autism. There might be no group of kids in the city more worthy of Mav Party's help.
A couple of years ago, we began to follow research on the impact of natural environments on children's health and well-being.
Party is the program manager for the Children's Investment Fund.
We learned that exposure to natural environments improves children's cognitive development and helps them develop observation skills and creativity.
It therefore seemed natural to Party that a natural playground might best serve the kids at the Spark Center. So she gave them some money to help build one.
They transformed a weedy, trash-strewn patch of ground into what we see today, a place of great natural beauty where some of Boston's most vulnerable children can begin to heal.
Okay, I think we're ready to cut the ribbon.
One, two, three. Yay!
Kids pour into the lovely green half acre, a place that might appear as nothing more than a splotch of forest were it not for the obvious touch of a designer.
You know, a lot of these kids can't take advantage of a typical playground structure with swings and slides.
Tamar Warburg with Studio G Architects and Jamaica Plain helped lay out the space.
We also really want them not to be able to play outside, but to be able to sense something about what the natural world is like. So everything here is built out of stones and logs and earth and sand and water and grass. They can roll down the hill, or they can sit on the logs, or they can climb up the stepping stones and onto the boulders.
Hi. Can you tell me what you're doing?
I'm playing in the sand.
What do you got there?
Sand.
Okay. I should have known that was a stupid question, but I guess I'm used to a more complicated and gadgety world. It's just sand and plants and rocks. But again, all laid out in a deliberate manner.
Let me give you an example. This rock here, we uncovered after we took out all the garbage that was on the site. And it was standing about 3 feet high. So we sloped up the earth to get to it and kind of made a stepping intermediate kind of soft landing place below it. So you think like a kid, okay, how can I get into trouble? And then you make sure that it's safe and that they can't get into that trouble.
Right, so you can only go for about a foot and a half tumble there now.
That 18 inches is about what you want, yes.
Now, this isn't all to say there's not some equipment. At one corner, kids make their way across a stout wooden balance beam with no small amount of adult assistance.
Let's go climbing. Ready? Let's go up.
Wow, you did it!
My name is Dana Hoyt. I'm a teacher at the Spark Center.
So how's this working out so far, Dana?
It's great. They play a lot differently out here than they do anywhere else.
Can you tell me about that?
Our other traditional playground, they run around in circles, they play on the bike, they go down the slide. Out here, they make a lot of their own decisions about where they're going, what they're doing. They're a lot more creative in the way they play.
One, two, three.
At another corner, children sit with a teacher and play with wooden blocks that were fashioned from a tree that had to be taken down when the property was rehabbed.
Let's make some instruments. All right.
All right. Let's do the big blocks.
My name is Geraldine Long. I'm a teacher at Spark Center.
How's this working out so far?
I mean, you can tell the kids that live in apartment buildings because they have no backyards and they just run and have a very good time. They discover lots of bugs, butterflies. They love it.
2 years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics launched a program called Prescribing Nature.
Again, Mav Party of the Children's Investment Fund.
In response to alarming increase in childhood obesity, as a result, some pediatricians have begun to prescribe an hour of outdoor activity every day for their preschool and school-age patients. Now, that might work for children in the suburbs or rural areas, but many urban children don't have backyards.
Party winces and shakes her head as she comes to the next sentence.
And in some neighborhoods, their parents are justifiably reluctant to take them out to a local park.
She says that sad reality, borne out by too many recent news stories of Boston children shot while playing, necessitates a new approach to recreational space. It's another reason why the Children's Investment Fund is backing natural playgrounds at schools, where kids can get their nature fix with adult supervision. Another one of these at a Dorchester Early Childhood Center will be completed this summer. And administrators here at Spark plan to use their new playground as a center to train other urban educators how to foster nature-focused play.
The poet Maya Angelou once said, "Everyone needs a place that is furnished with hope." This lovely place that's furnished with grass and flowers, bird song and breezes, is also furnished with hope. Thank you so much.
That story from Radio Boston's Adam Ragusea. You can see some pictures of the Spark Center's brand new natural playground at wbur.org/Boston. So I've got to wonder, if you've ever taken your child to a place like that, we'd love to hear about your experience. Or even if you're still a believer in good old-fashioned swing sets and asphalt, we'd like to hear that too. Or maybe even a believer in just a forest, if you can get your kids to one. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. With me in the studio now is Tamar Warburg of Studio G Architects. You heard her in Adam's story, and she helped design that park. Welcome back to the show, Tamar.
Thank you.
Also with us from the studios of WCAI is one of the originators of the research on which this whole natural playgrounds idea is based. David Elkind is Professor Emeritus of Child Development at Tufts University. He's the author of the classic The Hurried Child and, more recently, The Power of Play. Professor Elkind, welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, let me just begin by asking you, these natural playgrounds are supposed to foster what's called unstructured play. Can you explain to us exactly what that is and why it's particularly good for child development?
Well, self-initiated play is a way in which children learn when they play a game of that they pick up game of baseball, for example. They learn to make their own rules. They learn to play with the whatever equipment they have. They also learn a lot about each other. They learn which kids are aggressive, which kids are more passive, who's leaders, who's their followers. There's a lot of peer learning that happens in the kind of spontaneous play of children when it's self-initiated. And unfortunately, a lot of that kind of spontaneous self-initiated play is disappearing as childhood moves indoors and children spend more and more time in front of television and computer games. So playgrounds such as the one you've described are really so important for children to get back to self-initiated play and through the kinds of learning that they can get only through playing with other children and also through creating their own games, their own toys. So I think we really need, and there is a whole international movement now towards natural playgrounds with children designing and being involved in the playgrounds themselves, helping design them. In New Zealand, the Maori mm-hmm. children decorate the walls and use some of the natural things from the beaches to build their own things, and that's great. right? It builds children's ability to be curious and inventive, and curiosity, imagination are like muscles. If you don't use them, you lose them. And too often when we have these watch me toys and watch me games, they don't give children the opportunity to really initiate their play and to create.
Well, if I might turn to Tamar Warburg here, I'm thinking back to my own childhood, which I was fortunate enough to actually have a forest in my backyard and a creek not so far away and pretty safe streets to ride my bike on. So I kind of reveled in all that unstructured play that David Elkind is talking about. So why is it, though, that someone would need or a community might need someone like you to actually design a playground to encourage this when hopefully you could just send kids outside to do what kids do?
Well, you have to realize that the Spark kids, like a lot of inner city kids, they can't easily hike through the woods or climb a rocky hill or scramble mm-hmm. through a stream. When Holly Ben-Joseph and Studio G included all these elements in the playground for Spark, these are elements these kids aren't exposed to usually. And of course, rather than specifying equipment out of metal or plastic, we're looking to create natural playgrounds of natural materials that are all around us. You heard about the logs, the stones, sand, water, grassy hills for rolling, plants the kids can grow for food.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick call here. Dana's calling from Wellesley. Welcome to Radio Boston, Dana.
Hello, Magna. Thank you for inviting me. My children went to the Wellesley Child Study Center preschool, where they had the opportunity under Mariucci to work in natural playground there, natural play space, which my children got to take full advantage of for all the reasons that your guests have commented on. But as we were building that structure, we faced many challenges with all the regulations today around children play spaces and how much space needs to be around a swing, per se, or a climbing area. And how are schools and playgrounds in cities and beyond supposed to deal with managing all of the regulations today with the desire to create more natural space for mm-hmm. children to play in?
Let's turn that question back to Tamar Warburg. The regulations around building new playgrounds like this, how do you manage them?
Well, it's a really good question because, of course, the reason the regulations came into being was because of manufactured play equipment that rose up very high and that did pose certain challenges. Actually, a lot of those challenges don't exist when you're designing a natural playground. If you're talking about logs, sand, water, stepping stones, these things do not pose the same kinds of hazards. Of course, we have to work with, for example, the licensor of the child for the child care center at Spark came out to the site, and we explained exactly what we were trying to do to kind of educate not just our clients but also the licensors and the authorities on the qualities that these kinds of playgrounds have.
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned conventional playgrounds. I mean, the ones that we're all familiar with the bright plastic slides or metal slides and merry-go-rounds and things like that. Those, for better or for worse, they're plastic, they're metal, they should stand up to the elements. They can be made in different shapes and designed possibly more easily for safety issues. So why bother even building playgrounds out of materials that could give splinters or rot or the potential downside of these more natural spaces?
Well, the truth is that every playground requires maintenance. And whether you have a structure made out of metal, I mean, it's going to rust and it's going to need paint, or a structure out of heavy timbers that you've purchased, or something that are logs, everything needs to be sanded down and taken care of on a periodic basis. Same as a building, it's the same is true for a garden.
Mm-hmm. I heard that there's this phrase called nature deficit disorder. And
yes.
I mean, Adam actually in his piece sort of hinted at that, that there are a lot of children out there who, by virtue of living in these highly urbanized areas, we heard someone in his piece say, you could tell these are children who live in apartment buildings and don't even have backyards because when they get outside, they run like crazy because they're not very frequented, or they don't get to get outside into nature all that often. David Elkind, do you buy this whole notion of nature deficit disorder? Is it one of the things that's maybe impeding healthy development of children in urban areas?
Yes, but I don't think it's a new phenomenon. I think that children in London decades ago and many of the big cities have always had that kind of thing, children working in factories and so on. So that I think we shouldn't sort of romanticize the past and think that everything was much better then. But certainly it's true that children who are living in very urban areas where there's very little greenery, and you know, in some communities now, children are not even allowed to play in the streets. So I think there is this kind of deficit that where children don't know what plants and animals really are like, and really it's a whole new experience to go out into the country and see a cow or see things that they had never seen before. So the more that we can, you know, enable these children to get some of those kinds of experiences, that see the natural world, because I think that too often what happens is they're exclusively inside, or dealing with the computers, or they're dealing with television or something, and they're seeing this virtual world rather than the real world. And certainly the virtual world is important, mm-hmm. but the real world is really the world that they should know first. And so anything that we can do to bring that natural world to them, I think, is to the good. And that's why I think the kind of playground that you're talking about now is so wonderful, because it gives children the opportunity to really use their senses of touch and smell and so on, that sometimes get atrophied in a situation where children are just looking mm-hmm. at things and don't have that richness of environmental experience.
Well, Tamar Werber, your take on nature deficit disorder and bringing the richness of that natural experience to children who may not be able to have it on a daily basis.
Well, exactly. Richard Lav's work on nature deficit disorder is even more important now in an era where kids are plugged in so much of the time. I mean, you can't learn about the environment from the National Geographic Channel. You have to get out there into the world and experience it, as you say, with all of your senses. And you've got to remember, these SPARC kids, a lot of them have serious disabilities, including blindness. And we have to design places that you can experience with all five senses. You can explore the fragrant plants in the gardens. You can taste the berries. You can hear the wind through the pine trees, and all the musical instruments that are out there in the park.
Mm-hmm. We've got a lot of comments here online at wbur.org/Boston. Lee, Tracy Zager says, as a teacher, I researched playgrounds for my school and learned that bullying increases as visibility increases. Once they've climbed on the big toy a few times, kids are done, and they start working on the social angles instead. When you have open-ended play and more interaction with nature, bullying decreases. Let's take a quick call from Marlboro. Stacy's on the line. Welcome to Radio Boston, Stacy.
Hi, Magna. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's your thought today?
I teach 8th grade science in a suburban neighborhood, but the kids have been scheduled so much and their activities have been so structured that they don't know how to explore. By the time they've gotten to 8th grade, they don't know how to look at a rock and just look at the different features of it, or explore even any kind of media, because everything they're told to do is so scripted. You do this with this thing, you do that. And I think that this natural play will help them develop their curiosity and regain that. And this isn't just an urban problem. It's a suburban problem just as much.
Mm-hmm. Stacy, thank you so much for your call. David Elkind, Stacy raises this question that's actually kind of been lingering in my head. She says it's not just urban, it's also a suburban problem. And you'd think in maybe the suburbs there would be more opportunities to get involved in natural environments or have different kinds of playgrounds. So it's not so much the playground itself that's the issue, but how we as adults are encouraging children to play or to not play. Isn't that really sort of what's underlying all of this here?
Well, I think so. And I was walking in a really nice suburb of Los Angeles in Culver City on a beautiful spring day. Well, actually, it was a summer day. And I didn't see any bikes or kids on rollerblades or roller skates and so on. And these were all houses in which young families. And it was really startling to me to not see children out on a beautiful day. And they may have been out through some kind of program or another. But it really is striking that when you walk down in suburban areas, you don't see children playing outside the way they once did. And I think that childhood, in many cases in the suburbs, has moved indoors as children. And we have a lot of data now that children have lost 10 to 12 hours of free play a week, and a lot of more. And the bike riding is down, and a lot of the time is spent now watching television or playing computer games and so on. And so, and of course, we have the increase in type 2 diabetes and the obesity in children as they sit in front of television eating junk food. So I think those are problems that are common to the suburbs as they are to the inner city. We have two parents working and single parents in the suburbs and well, so that these things are, it's more convenient, unfortunately, for children to, use television and games and so on as babysitters when we have very, very busy lives, but it's not certainly in the best interest of children.
Well, Tamara Warburg, if I just might turn the last question to you. In the sort of more natural playgrounds that you've been a part of and have helped design, have you seen parents being able to relax a little and maybe not want to hover so much so that this more natural way of playing is encouraged in children?
I do agree, and I think the parents actually have a great time too. And we're talking about multi-age experience. We're not just talking about kids of a certain age the way conventional play equipment is. We're talking about a way of learning and a way of being. And as an architect, I'm repeatedly convinced of the power of design to influence behavior.
So there's the playground at the Spark Center. How many more of these natural playgrounds might show up in Boston in the near future?
Oh, we just finished the Viet Aid playground in Dorchester, which also has an Asian influence, that population there, and I'm sure there are many others coming down the road.
Well, Tamara Warburg, Senior Architect at Studio G Architects, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And David Elkind, Professor Emeritus of Child Development at Tufts University and author of The Hurried Child and, more recently, The Power of Play. True pleasure to have you on Radio Boston today, Professor Elkind. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow at 3 for more Radio Boston.